Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP webinar on American Overseas Schools. At this time, I'd like to introduce Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and thank you. And we want to thank everybody for being here today. We are really excited to learn more about the overseas schools, and I want to introduce you to our two distinguished principal speakers this afternoon. Serves as the director of the Office of Overseas Schools in the U.S. Department of State. He joined the office in 2013 and was assigned as the Regional Educational Officer for Eastern Europe, Russia, and South Central Asia. He has also served as the RO for a portion of the Western Hemisphere, Central America, Caribbean. And in addition, he has served as the REO for Africa before his appointment as director of the office in 2018. Before joining the Office of Overseas Schools, Mr. Shearer worked as superintendent of the American International School of Lagos, Nigeria, and president of the executive board of the Association of International Schools of Africa. So obviously, Tom, very well-traveled and very well-suited for this position. Our next speaker that I'd like to introduce to you is Dr. Branch. He joined Associate in August 2017 as a senior consultant focused on director and head of school and superintendent searches. In August of 2018, he assumed the leadership role of the new director of consulting services position while Search Associates conducted a worldwide search for the permanent director of consulting services. In August of 2019, he returned to the role of senior consultant, where he dedicates his time to senior leadership searches, as well as board governance training, strategic planning, and mentoring of less experienced school leaders. So I'm going to turn it over to you all, and very much looking forward to your presentation today.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Branch. And it's truly a pleasure to be here and speaking with the members of NAESP and our dear friends with the association. And I first have to thank all those in the audience and thank them for their service and their work with their school community, with their students, with their teachers, and with their districts, no matter where they're located, because it's a daunting task, especially in the last year. The job in itself is difficult. I just want to say thank you, and I'm sure Brent echoes my comments to say thank you for all of what you do for our kids across the country. As Dr. Branch mentioned, I'm a former principal at elementary, middle school, high school, before I went, further in the ranks. But I work for the Office of Overseas Schools within the State Department. We're not affiliated to the Department of State. We are focused on the international schools that serve our diplomatic communities abroad. So as you'll probably hear from Brent, there are thousands of international schools around the world. But the U.S. government is particularly interested in the American international schools, or the American schools of, whether it's the American school in Shanghai or the American school in Johannesburg or the American school in Paris or the American school in Ethiopia. We have a vested interest that these schools overseas be equivalent or better than what we would find here in the United States. And so our interest in these schools is that we have, top flight U.S. leadership, top flight U.S. teaching certificated personnel, top flight curriculum, top flight, programs and materials and supplies and so forth. So our interest lies directly in these 193 assistant schools. And they're located all over the globe. I think we have 268 embassies around the world and consulates. And we have 193 schools. So, you know, we do not have an American school at each embassy or location. And you can imagine if you think about Somalia or you think about Chad or really some of these really difficult assignments, there's probably not going to be a school there because we don't bring kids. But the schools play a particular importance to the State Department because they serve as a great recruiting tool to bring our folks overseas. And if there's no schooling, obviously the employees are, I would say, less than thrilled that they're going to bring their families to a location that there's not A, a good school, or B, a school at all. So you can see where they're at, but these schools are different than public schools here in the U.S. in the sense that they're all independent and they're all nonprofit. You know, they're independent, community-based, company-sponsored, church-related, proprietary. But the 193 schools that we sponsor or that we support are those schools that are nonprofit, independent, non-religious, and provide services to a multinational teaching faculty as well as a multinational student body. Brent and I both were overseas for a number of years. And I tend to see 50, 60 different nationalities reflected in these international schools. It's quite diverse. It's quite exhilarating, to be quite honest. Curriculum is usually based, they always use the word loosely termed international, but, you know, they're pretty much based in U.S. pedagogy, whether it's Common Core or state standards. You'll see lots of schools that have AP classes, you know, in the secondary level. But typically, I think you'll also hear this from Brent, that a lot of the international schools, endorse and use the IB program, the world school program with primary years and middle years, as well as the diploma program. Go ahead, Rory. Here's where the U.S. government has a vested interest. We have 193 schools that receive support from our embassies. You can see that the American republics are Central and South America, Europe, Western and Eastern Europe, Asia, obviously, Near East and Southeast Asia. Near East is basically the Middle East, and then Africa as well. Let's see, just some, you know, pictures say 1,000 words. I like to show everybody that actually these schools overseas, they're pretty cool, and they love to flaunt their internationalism. And you see Islam, you know, we have an American school in Islamabad and Accra and Mozambique and Jakarta, and you'll see some other photos from elsewhere. But you know, this is the mission of the office, which was started in 1964, was to promote American education around the world. So our focus is really to support strong educational programs for dependents of embassy kids and develop a model American schools to promote mutual educational cultural understanding for all. It's probably the best form of diplomacy that we have going in the State Department these days. So this is the statistical look at what all these 193 schools look like. There's about 135,000 kids. That's down about 6% from last year. About 30% are U.S. citizens. And then we have, you know, roughly a quarter, 27% of the kids are host country nationals, whether it's in Brazil or Nigeria or China. And then 44% of the student population is from the rest of the globe. And then look at the average SAT score from these schools. Just last year in 2020, the average was 1229, which puts it and ranks it with the top performing school districts across the country in the U.S. So our support provides, you know, we want to make sure that these schools are fully accredited by a U.S. organization, mostly New England, Advanced Ed, or Cognia is what their name now, New England, Middle States, Cognia, and then the Western Association based in Sacramento. We foster school-to-school partnerships with schools in the U.S., with schools overseas. We've set up regional educational associations to be kind of like educational service districts so that these assisted schools in Africa have a, you know, have a means to foster professional development and other issues. We deal with a lot of security measures overseas, much like all of you do here in the U.S. I think I told Brent last week that I think we've invested about $125 million in security upgrades in schools since 2003. And, you know, it's needed and it's warranted and it's helpful to all the schools. And then we provide grants and assistance. When you're the assisted school, when you're the American school assisted by the U.S. Embassy and the State Department, you receive, you know, financial grants, security upgrades. You receive assistance with shipping and goods. You receive help with visas. You receive help with political dialogues with the host country. So, I mean, it really means a lot. And we consider the assisted schools to be the gold standard of international schools around the world. Here's an example of a school graduating in the Cairo American School, and they graduate at the pyramids. That's a pretty special moment for faculty, administrators, and kids. I mean, we all revel in their joy, right? Keep going, Rory. Here's some more pictures, the American School in Dakar and Addis. There's the American School in Vienna, Asuncion, Reykjavik, St. Stephen's in Rome. Here's the Brandenburg International School in Berlin. So you can see the pictures. Teaching is teaching. Leadership is leadership around the world, but the international school community has some unique features to it that are different than a domestic assignment. And so we're hopeful that some of you may be interested or at least have questions about being involved or being interested in serving overseas. And I think the question that comes up now is that if there's any questions that are coming through the chat, we can, before I hand it off to Brent, I'd like to address them. Rory, are you there?
Yeah, no, I'm looking, and I'm Tom. I'm looking at the questions in the chat box that are starting to come in right now. How long is the term of commitment? What are schools looking for in leaders? How do you begin the process of finding schools and vacancies? And as openings are typically listed through specific, are they listed through specific international schools, or do they list primarily through agencies? Is there a fee to apply? How do you go about selecting a particular region? I mean, a number of just excellent questions, I think, which really set the stage for our being able to move into really starting to talk a little bit about, you know, first of all, what is it that schools are looking for in terms of candidates, and what are the nature of the selection criteria? And then I see there's a question here. Is having your own school-age children a barrier to be considered for opportunities? And the answer to that is absolutely not. And how does retirement work for overseas schools if you have yours already in the state system? You know, we'll really, I think, begin to speak to all of these excellent questions. So, Rory, if we might, let's just make the move to the next. First of all, in terms of taking a look at what is it that schools overseas are looking for when they begin the process of launching a search for whether it be a principal position, maybe a deputy head of school or superintendent position. Generally they're looking for a combination of both professional preparation as well as professional experience. And, you know, you're often looking at a minimum of a master's degree in educational leadership. and a minimum of 2 years of administrative experience. But clearly, depending on certain positions, they're going to be looking for far more of that, far more experience, and sometimes far more professional preparation as well. Many of our international schools are looking for previous successful experience, and they're looking to see to what degree do you have, a progression that reflects a successful tenure as a successful teacher, potential principal, successful principal, and have been, particularly when we're talking about either a head of school, director, or superintendent search, to what degree have you had successful experience in that role within the United States prior to making the transition into the international school community? Often, certification and licensure is also important because there are some countries in which they literally are unable to successfully get you a work visa in the absence of your demonstrating that you have the professional qualifications. And so we often encourage stateside administrators to ensure that they keep their professional license, certificate, credential, whatever it might be called, in the state in which it has been issued to you, that you keep that current and that you keep it active. And then some regions have age restrictions based on resident visas and work permits. I'm doing a search right now for a founding head of school in Wuhan, of all places, Wuhan, China. And they have a restriction on age specific to 60. They could not secure a work visa for anyone who was older than 60. So right now this search is really ideally focused on candidates who are 55 and younger, because the school is ideally looking at a tenure of 5 years in duration. The initial contract will be for a period of 3 years, but anticipating that people may in fact stay, you know, for a longer period of time, and that's what they would want ideally. You'd want people to assume a leadership role with kind of a timeline in mind of looking at really a 5 to 7 year tenure ideally. Rory, moving on to the next slide. So, you know, what are those qualities that have really contributed to success of people who are in leadership roles within the international school community? As would be looked for, you know, in a search in the U.S., looking specifically towards candidates who have excellent professional experience, who clearly have a combination of both competence and confidence. The ability to be flexible and adaptable is really critical within the international school environment, because much as we've learned here in the last, you know, 12 months specific to COVID, often you can be working in an environment where it seems like the goalposts are always moving and shifting. And you have to, if you're in a leadership role, you have to be able to adapt and to be flexible depending on, you know, the conditions and what's happening within that international school environment. Looking at really excellent interpersonal skills, you know, that ability to be an excellent listener, that ability to communicate effectively, whether it's in writing, whether it's in making presentations, you know, as you're interacting with students, with parents, with faculty, with staff, with administrative colleagues, and with the board that you're working with. If you're in, let's say, that head of school or superintendent role, collaborative leadership style, and then also bringing really a sense of humor and sense of adventure. Let me just move to a couple of the questions that are being asked in the chat box right now. What if you're young enough to have residence and work in that country, but your spouse is older? Do they fall under the age restriction limitations as well? And the answer to that question is no, they do not. Provided that the employee, the person who's actually going to receive, you know, the contract for employment meets those criteria, either she or he can have an older spouse who may very well not be seeking full-time employment, and that person could be accompanying you and would be an eligible dependent under the terms and conditions of your contract. You know, what is it that you might begin to think about if you are at a stage right now where you're just beginning to entertain the possibility of looking at what an international assignment might look like for you? you know, some of the things that you can begin to reflect upon is, in what ways might you be an excellent match for a particular position that you would be actively seeking? And what's the nature of your current resume? Do you have a statement of educational philosophy that's already been articulated? Who are your references? Who are people who have served as your direct and immediate supervisors throughout the course of your professional career? And to what degree are those people already in a position that they're willing to both either serve as a confidential reference for you, or they're actually in a position to be able to write a letter of reference on your behalf? Do you have access to official transcripts and certification documents that might be requested as a part of an application submission process? And if you are married and your spouse happens to be an educator, which can often be an advantage, it would be important that he or she would also have their professional profile and file in order as well, so that you could present yourself often as an educator couple, because international schools do sometimes place a priority on being able to hire educator couples if at all possible. A couple comments about the administrative recruiting cycle within the international school community. It begins generally much earlier than it does in the U.S. I mean, international schools are beginning right now to start to list positions for the 2022-2023 school year, particularly at the kind of head of school, director, and superintendent level. Specific to principal openings, you will often see principal openings begin to be listed either directly on school websites or through a variety of international recruiting organizations, all of which we are going to, prior to the end of this presentation, share that information with you. I represent but one of four or five organizations that do a significant amount of recruiting into the international school environment. And we want to make sure that you have access to the information that would allow you to connect with all of those organizations if you are serious about entertaining the possibility of an international relocation. The most active period of recruiting really falls within that time frame of between August and February. If I reflect back on the years that I was a head of school in the overseas environment and would highlight just Saudi Aramco Schools, Singapore American School, and the American School of Dubai, I would have conversations with our administrators very early on in the fall, in August and in September, about what their plans were for the following year. And anyone who was not prepared to think seriously about extending their contract, we would be launching a search for their replacement as quickly as possible. So as early as August or September, we would be listing a position to be opening for the following year. And, that's looked upon as probably being quite aggressive from a stateside perspective. But when you think about all the things that have to be put in place in order to not only hire people, but to begin to prepare them for a smooth and successful transition and then to relocate them geographically, you need that kind of a timeline to really ensure that you set everyone up to be successful. Often candidates will, within the interviewing process, be invited to the schools in which they have been identified as finalists. This will occur at the principal level. It will occur, at an assistant superintendent level or at a director superintendent level as well. Directors and superintendents are generally in the international school community hired directly by the boards, and then principals and all other leadership roles are generally hired by the superintendent, the head of school, or the director, depending on what the title might be in that particular school environment. What are some of the advantages of a personal nature that come with really thinking seriously about an international leadership opportunity? I would say to you, and I'll go carefully in saying this, but having worked 21 years in public education in the U.S. and having spent 23 years in international education abroad, I think the thing that surprised us in making the move into the international school community were really the overall nature and quality of the students that we worked with. So often students came to school from two-parent families. They often came to international schools from families who had not only two parents who were both highly educated, but who deeply valued education and were really actively engaged in the education of their children as partners with the school. So you have the opportunity to work with an amazing group of students, really with a very supportive, engaged parent community, and the opportunity to actually attract and retain and further develop just an outstanding group of professional educators. And so you're walking onto a campus day in and day out where the people who are there are just so deeply and fundamentally committed to working to ensure that they're providing the students who are on the campus with just the best possible education that they can, that that's just such an amazing environment in which to work. There are untold amazing opportunities for professional growth and development for you as a leader. When my wife and I moved initially in 1994 to Saudi Arabia, and we spent 13 years in Saudi Arabia, we actually wondered if we were going to be, you know, geographically isolated and insulated from professional development. But Tom has already made reference to the fact that there are these, you know, regional professional associations that are just providing some of the best and some of the most ongoing professional development opportunities available within the international school community, let alone what schools individually are doing. So phenomenal opportunities for ongoing professional growth and development, phenomenal opportunities by way of the education of your own children. I happen to personally believe that one of the greatest gifts that parents can give their children is an opportunity to have your children attend an international school in which they are learning from and with students from literally all over the world. We're doing a search right now for an associate superintendent position in a school in Dubai, 109 different nationalities represented in the student body. And so, you know, it's a situation in which your own children's friends will end up being, you know, students from literally all over the world. It's an absolutely fascinating, engaging lifestyle. I mean, you have to talk about, you know, not only the opportunities to learn immensely, you know, about the culture in which you are living and where you are geographically located, but the opportunities for travel and the opportunities also for excellent savings potential. And we'll get into some of those, I think, questions in greater detail about the competitiveness of compensation and benefits a little bit later here in the presentation. Moving on in terms of other, you know, professional advantages, many of the international schools are relatively small school organizations. 80% of the international schools worldwide are less than 1,000 students, K-12. We would, from a stateside perspective, look at these schools and quite frankly see them as being relatively small. But the size gives you an opportunity to really get to know people well and to really also have what I think are a significant level of impact relatively quickly. Flexibility in terms of staffing with really high quality faculty and staff. When I refer to few legal issues as a stateside superintendent, when I made the decision to move overseas and shared that with the legal firm that we were working with, you know, in Denver at the time, when one of the chief legal, person said to me, "Brent, why are you moving overseas?" I said, "I'm spending way too much time with you." And, you know, we always had, it seemed like, a significant number of legal issues. And, that just was not the case, throughout my entire 23-year tenure in the international school community. You have the opportunity, you know, as really, a learning leader, to be actively daily engaged in focusing on the quality of the educational opportunities that are being made available to students. And so, you know, you have, you know, opportunities to work in an environment that often doesn't have a great deal of requirements. I will have to qualify that by saying that is going to vary from geographic location to geographic location. And then, as I said earlier, you're going to be working, you know, very much with a very, very supportive parent community. But what are some of the professional challenges? There can be high board turnover. There can be within the international school community a great deal of turnover in your student population and in your parent population. Tom has referred to the fact that, you know, he focuses specifically on those 193 schools that really serve the diplomatic community. And that is a part of that community that is turning over every 2 or 3 year period. An ambassador, you know, a diplomatic officer, an economic officer, often their terms of tenure in a particular geographic location are only 2 or 3 years. And so a certain number of parents are needing to move as it relates to the requirements of their employment on an ongoing basis. In the years that I was at Singapore American School, and that's a student body of about 4,000 students, K to 12, we turned over about 25% of our students on an annual basis. So we could anticipate that we would have close to 1,000 new students joining us almost each and every year. And so that turnover is quite unique within the international school community, and you really need to prepare yourself for that. And you can have relatively high teacher turnover as well, and that can create both a combination, quite candidly, of challenges as well as opportunities. You're working often in very, very diverse communities. You're working with parents who literally their own educational backgrounds are can be very, very different and very unique from that of the school in which you might be working. And so that creates some interesting, you know, opportunities. I happen to think personally that's what really makes international schools so rich and so rewarding is that diversity. Some of the locations, and Tom has already made reference to this, some of the locations can be quite geographically isolated. And it's something to be cognizant of and be thinking about, and to be thinking about whether a geographic location that is quite isolated really is the right fit for you. In addition to that, there can be language issues. Many of the searches that we do in Central and South America, speaking Spanish or in South America, Portuguese would actually be a requirement for a certain number of positions. That's not true across the world, but it can be particularly true in some geographic areas, and being cognizant and aware of what might be those language expectations would be important as you do your own search. And then in addition to that, you know, not surprisingly, you, for all practical purposes, can find yourself serving in a leadership role as being the mayor of that community in which you're working. You know everyone knows you, and when there are issues and when there are challenges and when there are problems, you know, people are going to be coming seeking you out. And so I think understanding that the international school community has that dynamic, and it represents a phenomenal both personal and professional opportunity as well, is extremely important. And then I'd like to just talk a little bit about, you know, and some of those characteristics of overseas schools. They really become the focal point of the international community. The school is the place where people seek to have a sense of normalcy in what might be an international community, very, very different from anything that they've experienced previously. And so the school becomes very much a focal point, and it becomes often very much the gathering place for the expat community as well. The other characteristics of overseas schools is that, you know, those expectations from parents are very high. Often parents, either themselves or the company they work for, are paying $20,000, $25,000, $35,000 a year in tuition for these children to be enrolled in the school. And rightfully, they have high expectations. As I've said earlier, you know, often really well-educated parents who have high expectations of their children, but also have high expectations for the school in which their children, you know, are enrolled. And then you are looking at really working with an amazing group of young people in programs that are really intended to be designed and developed and delivered in ways that give students an opportunity to really pursue their passions and their interests. Phenomenal emphasis right now on really personalized education within the international school community and creating as broad and as wide and as a diverse set of learning opportunities for students as is possible. And then I've talked, you know, about the fact that these are often relatively small communities. What you see the contact information here for both Tom and myself. Were you to reach out to either one of us, we would be more than happy to send you this PowerPoint in its entirety and also serve as a contact point for you to be able to be of support and assistance to you in any way that we can. Rory, if we just move to the next slide, it will identify what are a number of the search organizations that currently work within the international school community. And you see the top four, Kearney Sandow International School Services, based in Kearney Sandow's in Ohio, ISS is in Princeton, New Jersey, Resource Group 175 is in California, Search Associates operates out of Pennsylvania. And then there's a very, very large international recruiting fair at the University of Northern Iowa that's conducted annually in the latter part of January, the early part of February. And UNI has been actively a partner with the international school community for a very, very extended period of time. Now I think in terms of just our coming back and being able to look at questions that are in the chat box, please, Tom.
Hey Brett, I see a number of conversations in the chat box about benefits and you and I both know of transitioning from domestic to overseas and how that impacts your retirement and, you know, what is the salary benefit range? I mean, you and I both understand it depends. It depends on size of school, location and things like that. But can you talk a little bit about the benefit? I mean, the benefits attached to it, you know, not only salary, but you know, medical and housing and,
yeah, absolutely. You
know, a typical yeah. package for a yeah. principal to sign a 2 or 3 year agreement.
Yes. You will often find that, to Tom's point, there'll be a combination in looking at, opportunities within the international school community. There will often be a combination of both compensation and benefits that makes the opportunity to move overseas to become initially, I think, very, very attractive. In general, salaries will be, for the most part, highly competitive. And when I say to you highly competitive, what I mean by that are salary ranges certainly vary across various geographic regions around the world. And we can talk about that in just a moment. But in general, you're going to find that salaries are going to be competitive. And one of the things that you're going to qualify for once you make the move into the international school community and have established your residency outside of the United States, you will qualify for what's called the foreign earned income exclusion, and you will not pay federal income tax on the first, I think it's currently $110,000 that you earn outside of the United States. So in addition to having relatively competitive compensation packages, the benefit packages that accompany that often include the following. You would often have housing provided for you, for your spouse, and for your children. You would often have not only the housing made available to you at no cost, but often the utilities are often covered as well in the packages. You would generally have a comprehensive medical insurance program that would likely give you not only in-country medical coverage, but often would provide you with coverage back to home of record when you were back in your home country, in this case in the U.S., in the summer or over some of the holiday periods. You would generally also receive what would be an annual home leave allowance, which would allow you to fly back to the international airport that is closest to your home of record each summer. You generally would find yourself looking at a 4 to 6 week period of vacation, which would include generally 4 weeks in the summer, 4 to 5 weeks in the summer, would also include the school breaks. And so would include, you know, the winter break, which could be 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the school itself, and also a spring break. In addition to that, there's generally a commitment to your ongoing professional growth and development. There can be in some of the larger schools some further benefits that are specific to maybe a transportation allowance, maybe a car allowance, or maybe they even make a car available in some schools to members of the leadership team. So when you start to take a look at, it's not just about what it is you're going to make from a salary perspective, but when you take a look at all of the other benefits that are a part of these packages, they are very, very, very competitive. If we were to try to, and Tom, please jump in on this, but if we were to speak specifically, I mean, and I should also mention that often schools will provide tuition remission for your own children right. to attend school as well. Yes, thank you. And that can vary from location to location. It's generally a minimum of waiver of tuition for two children and sometimes for more, depending on the size of the school and how robust their benefit package might be.
Right.
If I were to make some really broad and general statements about geographic regions around the world, Asia generally pays very, very competitively. The Middle East pays very competitively, and generally in the Middle East doesn't have in-country taxes. So if you work, if you work on the Arabian Peninsula, if you work in Kuwait, in Saudi Arabia, in the UAE, in Qatar, in Oman, you are likely not going to be paying any taxes in those countries. Europe has very competitive salaries, but Europe also has often very, very high taxation. You are going to see probably slightly less salaries in both Central and South America and in Africa on a whole, but the cost of living itself in those geographic locations is less. I'm sometimes asked, what are the best questions to be asking? You know, when I'm first moving into this, I think a good question to always ask is, what is it that I realistically can save? Because that ends up being a question that really can create a more level playing field. And I say that because you can be paid exceptionally well in some locations, but if the cost of living is quite high, right. and every time you go out, you know, you incur considerable expenses. So, Tom.
Brent, and you know this about me personally, that I was offered the opportunity to go overseas in 1992. And I had the best of both worlds that I was given a leave of absence from my school district here in the state of Washington to be able to go overseas for 4 years and then be able to return. Have you seen any trends in terms? Is that practice coming back? Are principals... Have you heard of principals, you know, requesting a leave of absence from the district and it being granted, or is that a thing of the past?
No, there's certainly some states that have, terms and conditions in place that allow administrators to leave, sometimes to not only leave the state, but to actually even pay into the retirement program in their absence, if they're engaged in education.
Exactly.
So that there are some places where that continues to occur, Tom. But I think I would say to you that that does end up being very much the exception to the rule.
Right.
And, I think one of the things that I would say to you, and I'll just talk very candidly about having stepped away from education in my early 40s, and having not been vested in a retirement program fully either in the state of Iowa nor in the state of Colorado. And basically my wife was an elementary educator, and the two of us, once we made that transition to the international school community, we pretty quickly came to the conclusion we were probably not going to come back to the U.S. We were going to stay overseas for an extended period of time. And we were subsequently then, you know, in a position in which we were forced to create our own, you know, kind of retirement program through very conscientious savings and investments. But
as I was reading the chats and knowing your, I mean, both of us, you know the overseas world, but reading your chats, I was thinking of our audience, and I hear a lot of questions from potential interested candidates, administrators who are looking overseas about transitioning away from their current assignment here domestically. And I think you and I both agree that timing is everything. I mean, it has to be right professionally. It has to be right in a personal manner. That all those factors weigh into whether you actually put your name in the hat, so to speak, to actually explore that opportunity overseas. Because, you know, we have parents who might be, you know, failing in health, or our kids are too young to take overseas, or they're too old, or, you know, you never know whatever circumstances are driving it. But don't you think timing plays a key role in people considering the opportunity?
There's no doubt, Tom, that timing plays a huge role in people's decision making about the potential for transition into the international school community. And I think, you know, along those lines, specific to timing, you know, often, you know, parents will, and I should say administrators and parents will be asking themselves, when is the best time and when is the right time? And that ultimately ends up having to really be an individual decision.
Right.
I think my own personal bias, and you're a parent who took your own children overseas as well, so you can bring that perspective to the table. But the opportunity that you can give your children to have that international educational experience will in fact change them for a lifetime, and will give them a very, very different view on the world as a result of having had an international school experience. I think I don't think it's an either or scenario here. Right. I think it can be both. I think for those of you who might be out there, who might be thinking about, is a 2 or a 3 or a 4 year assignment something that the international school community might be able to accommodate, and I could have that experience and then return to the U.S.? I think the answer to that is yes.
Yeah.
You'll have to look for that right opportunity, you know, to obviously make that work. I think the 2 year opportunities in the better schools are quite frankly virtually impossible, because the better schools are looking for sustained commitment to leadership and want people who step into leadership roles to make a commitment for a more extended period of time. So the 2 years and out and going home is probably not a viable option, you know, for any of a number of schools who look at sustained, continuous continuity in their leadership roles. But for people who say, but I don't want to make a 20-year commitment, I don't think you need to be looking at the international school opportunities through that lens at all. You could look at it very much through the opportunity that would have a more limited time frame associated with it, and then come back and plan to come back to the U.S. And I say it that way, you could plan to come back to the U.S. because, Tom, I don't know what your experiences were specifically, but it's been my observation that a relatively large percentage of people who thought they were coming for only a 2 or a 3 year period ended up coming and staying for a much, much, much longer tenure than they ever had initially anticipated.
I just find that really fascinating. You know, Brent, just to kind of follow up on your, before we look at all these questions and answers, and I'd love to get some of your comment in that regard. But, you know, from our perspective, as you know, when we sponsor these American schools overseas, our desire, our expectation and desire from our workforce and from people who are overseas, we want American leadership in American schools. And, you know, when there's a French school that it's run by someone who was trained and well versed in French national education, and the same with the Brits and the Australians or the Germans or so forth. And our American schools are so valuable to our embassy and to the expat community that, you know, our desire is always to have American leadership, people who are well-versed in pedagogy and, you know, are able to communicate with the U.S. embassy and understand best practices here back domestically, and they're connected in that regard. And that's always important to us, you know, that we see all those things. One of the things that I find very interesting among our colleagues in the audience is it's a big decision. You know, if you think about going overseas, that's not something that just that you're going to go to Paris for a week or you're going to go to Johannesburg for a week. It's a big decision to move your family overseas. You have to give it a lot of thought. Do you concur with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'd be interested, you know, to some degree, Tom, in even trying to get a sense of where people in our audience might be this afternoon relative to their own thinking about that. You know, there are some people who may have dropped into this session just to, you know, learn a little bit about the international school community. They haven't at all really seriously entertained it and maybe aren't going to seriously entertain it, but there may be others within the audience, you know, today, who have been thinking about it for some period of time and are at various stages of evolution and development in their own thinking. And it would be fascinating just to know, where it is that our audience is right now, right, kind of across maybe this five step continuum. Right. So why don't we take a moment to ask people if they would kind of respond to this? You see, you've got the survey in front of you, and if you'll just take a moment to tick the box that best reflects where you are, across this continuum. And then we'll share with you the results here in just a minute.
Yeah. I might want to put a plug in for our friends at NAESP. You know, Dr. Earl Franks and Dr. Branch and the whole entire staff at NAESP is such a great partner to the Department of State and the Office of Overseas Schools. And one of the things that I wanted to tell our audience is if you are a principal at one of the 193 schools, we provide a continued membership in NAESP for all our principals at the elementary, middle level. High school principals are a member of NAESSP, and then superintendents are members of the Association of School Administrators. And the other piece is that, you know, NAESP has a conference coming up in July that you and I will be presenting. If you want to meet with us face to face, or, you know, fingers crossed that everything goes according to plan in Chicago, but wanted to make sure that everybody was aware that you and I will be in Chicago as well to do this presentation again in person.
And we very much, Tom, look forward to that opportunity to meet people face to face. Just to give you an overview on the results of the poll. 6% of our participants today have indicated they're not at all interested, which is great. I mean, and we understand that the international school community obviously is not going to be for everyone, but 6%, not at all interested. 13% somewhat interested. 44% interested and would like to learn more. 38% very interested and have already started to consider international leadership roles. And we don't have anyone at this point in the audience who's currently seeking an international leadership role. But clearly the purpose of the presentation today was to really give you information and to help you begin to think about what might this road into the international school community look like. I think we'll certainly take further questions in the chat box. But Rory, if you wouldn't mind just slipping back quickly to the slide that has both Tom and my email's address on it, just so that people have a chance to, thank you, just so that people have a chance to see our email addresses. If you will reach out to either one of us, We are happy to forward this entire PowerPoint presentation on to you, not only for your information, but for your own follow-up. And you should feel free to reach out to either Tom or to me, and we would be happy to begin a conversation with you to see in what way or ways we could be of support and assistance to you as you continue to think about whether an international leadership opportunity might be the right opportunity for you. We have 5 minutes. We have 5 minutes left for questions. And so if you want to put, if you don't mind, if you've asked questions and we've missed them, but if you would like to, put questions back into the chat box, we would respond to them. Someone has said, are new administrators ever considered, or is the 2 years of experience an absolute must? Tom, what's your experience in the 193 assisted schools?
I think, for the most part, I think school boards and school superintendents are looking for an experienced principal. I mean, because these are private schools, nonprofit, independent, and you bring someone overseas, they're looking for someone that's actually sat in the chair for a while and that's provided leadership at a school. I would say that would be the predominant thought, but I do think there are some locations around the globe that are hard to fill locations that they may be open to someone who's qualified for the position and done an internship or has glowing recommendations that say they're ready for the next step. And some schools will, you know, take that into consideration. But I would say that's the minority rather than the norm.
Yeah, and I would,
from my experience.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Tom, that I think most international schools across the globe are ideally looking for people who have experience. The transition and the challenge of making a move to an international school community can be challenging in and of itself when you feel like you already have competence and confidence in doing the job. Just the move to a new international location can be a challenge. But if you're moving to a new place and assuming a new role and don't have previous experience, it makes it even that much more challenging. You know, there's a question that's been asked, what are the recommended next steps? Do we register with one of the agencies? I'm going to ask you to reach out to me, if you would, at my email. And what I will do is look to find a time when I could set up a Zoom conversation with you, and I could talk you through what are the best ways to think about framing your search in ways that would give you the opportunity to engage all of the organizations that you've seen represented in our presentation today. You won't get a pitch from me just specific to Search Associates.
Well, we have Gracie on there, so you know she's getting ready to close us down there, Brad.
Yep.
Well, I didn't share with you all, but I was an Army brat.
Oh.
And my dad was a colonel, so career military, and I always wanted to go overseas, and we never did. And now, after hearing your webinar, I'm really more disappointed than I've ever been, because it just sounds like such a great opportunity.
It is. It's a wonderful opportunity.
We so appreciate your time today, and you all are such, I mean, you complimented us. We have to compliment you. You've been such great partners to NAESP. It's one of the reasons we get to go to the State Department for our National Distinguished Principal Ceremonies. We're always grateful for the partnership. You know, if you add up those percentages of somewhat interested and very interested, you've got 82% of the people on the webinar today that are interested.
Thank you so much for your time. He's the main attraction. Brent is. He's all that.
Well, we look forward to being able to be of support to Dr. Branch, to anyone within the NAESP membership that we can. And, you know, as Tom said right at the beginning, we so appreciate and value the work that each and every one of those who logged in today are already engaged in. And as fellow colleagues in the profession, we want to compliment you and thank you for your commitment to doing good work on the behalf of students each and every day. So thank you again to NAASP for this opportunity.
Thank you for being with us today.